Welcome to 4Play Radio Sex Therapy with sex therapist Lori Watson and couples therapist Dr. Adam Matthews. We're here to help couples keep it hot. You can find us on 4playrst.com on the web. We're on iTunes and Stitcher, and we would love for you to listen to us and send us your ideas and your suggestions and your feedback. And we're just glad to hear from our listeners. We feel like this is such a fun conversation. Sometimes we're getting going these days beyond our little time limit and having fun talking to each other. Yeah, and today we have a really interesting conversation, I think.
It's one that I think, too, is maybe a bit controversial.
We're going to talk about spirituality and sexuality.
Yeah, and lots of people have different ideas about that is.
This is dicey, walking onto potentially hallowed ground.
Yeah. So, wondering about the issues that sometimes that brings up for couples in their sex life.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I notice a lot is that for the most part, when we talk about growing up, the ways that we talk about particularly religion and sex and the combination of the two, that for the most part, we're trying to avoid sexual experiences, right?
Right. Many people with faith have like an instruction to avoid sex before marriage.
Yeah.
And I would just say, as a sex therapist, you know, I think it's a really frightening thing for somebody to come to see a sex therapist, any counselor.
Yeah.
You know, they want to make sure that they're the same faith, or, you know, that they share the same values. And I think that for me, I am just so respectful of people's faith and never, never want them to cross their faith. And so I'm always about finding healthy workarounds that honor their deeper moral beliefs and their faith, you know, because I think that's so important. You know, at Awakenings, where I work, we are basically about helping couples who are committed keep it hot. You know, we see other couples in situations and we don't have that. We don't lay on anybody a moral imperative or something. And we're not spiritual counselors, but we really do deeply honor the faith and moral practices and cultures, because we see other cultures who, oftentimes I see a large population of Indian couples from India who, you know, are virgins at marriage, and that's completely outside of their culture to have any sexual experience whatsoever before marriage. And
so we're not trying to change culture.
That's
what I was just about to say. Like, we're not advocating for you to change your beliefs around that, because in any faith there are ways for sex to be
whole
hot
and healthy.
Yeah, but I think that one of the things that I see is that there's a switch that goes off for people that's difficult, is that if they have been raised in a faith tradition that says no sex before marriage, that you then get to the marriage ceremony, and in the course of one ceremony, it goes from being a no-no to yes.
Yeah. And then, now they're on the superhighway.
Yeah. And so the expectation...
Full stop to full go.
Yeah. And I think that expectation can be really difficult for some people to make that switch in their mind.
And Adam, this is why I became a sex therapist.
Really?
This dilemma is what brought me to sex therapy. I started my career as a marriage counselor and a counselor, and I taught premarital class in a really large Christian church. And I taught that for 7 years, multiple times a year. And I saw so many young couples coming back with sexual problems that I thought, wow, this is an important specialty. But one of the central problems I saw was faith-filled kids coming back with conflict over their sexual adjustment in marriage.
Because that adjustment is difficult, and sex has to be intentional in that way. And so then they're conflicted because what was once preached to them, don't do it. Now they're trying to find a healthy way to do it.
Yeah. And so I saw these kids, and I thought that there were so many conflicts present. Some of these kids with faith decided, okay, we're going to toe the line and we are not going to have sex before we get married. And the solution that they had to that was to be sexless in their dating life and in their engagement, you know, to draw a really tight line about sexual contact. And other kids crossed the lines that they felt were their faith lines, and they had wild sex. And then some people struggled somewhere in the middle of that. And I also got to witness the outcome of all of those choices on the other side of the altar.
Yeah.
You know, the many variations on that and how that impacted their marital sex.
Yeah. What were, do you think, that some of the ways that it manifested itself in their in married sex? Well, what were the problems that emerged out of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the things that I saw was the couple who shut down completely and said, you know, no sexual touching, no kissing, no passionate kissing, because that's just going to get our bodies going. And, you know, they had absolutely a shutdown. Unfortunately, at the altar, many of them, you know, obviously I have a skew, right? I'm only seeing the ones that are troubled. But many of them did not have a turn on at the altar.
Yeah.
And so they came into the honeymoon, the marriage, with little information because they didn't want to read things that might turn them on. So they didn't even have a working sense of what sex would be like. Mm. You know, they didn't know how to manage virginity.
Yeah.
You know, and their premarital counseling, their pastors hadn't talked about that. I did in my class talk about, you know, the switchover and what sex would look like. But it wasn't enough. It was an hour class, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not enough education. So they didn't read the books that we recommended. They didn't have a talk with anybody. They hadn't gone to the gynecologist. I mean, it was just a train wreck in terms of the complete shutdown. And they had conquered their impulse by muting their desire.
Oh, yeah.
And then they were like, okay, desire didn't turn back on. It's like, well
because it's not a switch, right?
Like, it's not a switch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and even though intellectually they had permission to be sexual, they somehow or another were not entering it with joy.
Mm.
You know, and I found that many times there were earlier problems. I mean, that this rigidity that they had about it was signifying other problems inside that were rigid. If it didn't, you know, if it wasn't a couple who made that decision, and I'm saying, you know, I'm not saying that that couldn't be possible, that they couldn't shut it down, be very tight before marriage, and then have it turn on. I think that that's a possibility. But what I saw was it didn't seem to work very well. They didn't seem to be passionate. And that was, I just saw so problematic. And then there was the couple who compromised, who had sex, felt guilty all the time, had sex, felt guilty all the time, had sex, felt guilty all the time. Frankly, guilt is an aphrodisiac.
Hmm.
I mean, doing something naughty, doing something that is forbidden is exciting.
Yeah. So they just felt like even married sex was
awful.
Yeah,
then they're married and it's like, no. Then they were married and it's like, oh, all that excitement is gone.
Oh, I see.
They're not doing the forbidden.
I see.
And so then they're like, now I don't know how to make it hot, you know, because now it's all okay. Or some of them, like I think you were implying here, is they would feel so guilty about their sin, about, you know, having crossed these lines, that they could never forgive themselves enough to enter what they believed God had for them, you know?
Yeah, and I think that that's interesting is that what I've seen in a lot of faith traditions, their efforts at kind of managing sexual morals is to just not ever have conversation about it. Then just it's all off limits. And you're not talking about sex in a healthy way. You're just not talking about sex at all.
Uh-huh.
And trying to, like, the shutdown is
really tight.
Yeah.
Like
throughout the whole group. And so I think that then you're looking at not just that, but then you just don't have any education about it. You don't know anything about it at all. You're almost entering it as a blank slate in some sense.
Yeah. And what do they do with their ideas in their head and their imagination? And I mean, some of them, I think one thing that I saw the young couple struggle with was maybe in prior relationships, they had thoughts and ideas and stuff. But then once they were married, they said, you know, I can't think about anything. I just have to be satisfied with physical sensation. They thought that it was strange, but they thought they had to turn their minds off because somehow or another, if they let their minds go in marriage, they were going to be diluting the purity of their relationship. And so, I mean, the issue is, I think we need our minds, especially as women, we need our imaginations and our minds working. And I think, you know, I live in the South. I know, I mean, there's a lot of religion down here. Yeah. We are good Bible thumping folks. And there's a lot of people that are anxious about using their imagination in sex, lest that lead them astray, right? Mm. Away from their faith, away from the boundaries that they have set. They're anxious about that. But it turns out for a woman, especially, we need our mind clicked on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so how do you do that? Engaged. And one woman I know, she was just adamant that she couldn't fantasize about sex. She couldn't, because later she confessed to me, if I fantasize about sex, I'm going to think about an old lover. And that would not be thinking about my husband. And I want to be here and now with him. And so, you know, I just think that, you know, I was able to get her to kind of say, is there a way that you could fantasize about your husband in some expecting experience? You know, could you do that? You know, even that. And she could do that. You know, she's like, yeah, you know, I can do that. And that would be okay.
Yeah. So we're really talking about the idea that faith and sexuality do not have to be mutually exclusive. We can integrate those two things and still have really enjoyable sex lives, but we do have
but
to
there's
look,
conflicts yeah. often, especially at the beginning in faith couples who, you know, often they have to overcome in order to enter sex and marriage and have it really hot.
Yeah, that's great. Maybe we can come back from the break and really talk about some really things that people can do to integrate those two things in their life and to help make that switch a little bit better.
Okay, great. Them. We'll be back with Foreplay Radio Sex Therapy and sex therapist Lori Watson and couples therapist Dr. Adam Matthews.
Wanting sex again. How to rediscover desire and heal a sexless marriage by certified sex therapist Lori Watson.
Each chapter is designed to fix one of the problems that cause low libido, from early marriage through the childbearing years, even all the way through menopause. I've also had men read it and tell me that for them, it was the most hopeful thing they read about resolving sexual problems.
Look for Wanting Sex Again on Amazon.com. You can also talk to Lori Watson for therapy in person or via Skype.
I offer couples counseling and sex therapy, and I think about both aspects of the relationship, emotional intimacy and sexual technique, and that combination together helps marriages be happy.
Improve your sex and improve your relationship with Awakening Center for Couples and Intimacy. Find out more at awakenloveandsex.com and sign up for their next couples retreat weekend hosted by Lori Watson. awakenloveandsex.com. Awaken what's possible.
Hey, welcome back to Foreplay Radio Sex Therapy with sex therapist Lori Watson and couples therapist Dr. Adam Matthews. We are so glad to have you with us. We're talking today about spirituality, faith, and sex, and kind of some of the problems and how you get through some of the issues. You know, I think there is, just to say, I think there's a big cultural thing out there that says, you know, religion shuts down sex.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, I hope that's not true. You know, I hope for many faith-filled people out there that they also get messages that their faith and their God wants them to have good sex, that it's something so important in marriage and such a blessing in marriage. And I think there are faiths that say that, but there are problems that happen with maybe distortions about what they've heard about sex in their faith. Certainly the strong messages about premarital sex, anti-premarital sex, and then making that sexual adjustment in marriage, that's a big, we just talked about that in terms of how that's a big problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one solution that I was thinking of, and then I'm going to ask you for yours too, Adam, is, you know, for the kids who go over their lines, you know, they got to forgive themselves and then go on to have the glorious sexual experience that they could have in the marriage.
Yeah. So if they're entering the marriage with a lot of guilt over their sexual history, is finding out how to forgive themselves. And I would say too, for their partner to forgive them as well.
Right.
For that to be a mutual experience of they can be starting fresh in their relationship.
Sure. Absolutely.
I think that is something that oftentimes doesn't happen. And there's often that guilt continues rather than them addressing it head on.
Yeah, I saw with what is a going young on. Couple, and she was really angry at him. She said, well, you know, he had other premarital experiences that I didn't. And she felt like somehow or another that made him bad or a bigger sinner or whatever than she was. And it was like, well, you knew that before you married him. I mean, it, see, for me, I don't think she needs to forgive him for that. I think in his faith, that's his standalone.
Okay.
You know, what he did before he met her to me is none of her business. That's between him and his faith and whatever. I really don't think she needs to forgive him for that. I think that she was horribly judgmental about that, about something that had nothing to do with her. I mean, he didn't, in my mind, he didn't cheat on her. They weren't married yet. They weren't together yet. I don't see that as, I felt like that was her sort of taking the upper hand morally that said, I get to judge you because you weren't as pure as the driven snow as I was. But it was like she was holding it over him still in the marriage. I found it so awful.
I do think there's a difference, though. I agree with you on the fact that if a partner is holding that as they are superior or as they are standing in judgment, I think then I agree that it's not, that that's not the correct way. I do think, however, that there is often an element of people of faith needing some kind of external forgiveness mechanism. And I think that there's a way, if it's done in a respectful way in partnered relationships, that my partner can say, I know everything you did before you married me. Right. And I know that for our faith, it was not, it's considered not okay. And I'm just going to offer you forgiveness in a respectful, mutual way that we're going to forgive each other for whatever sexual sin and non-sexual sin, and we're coming into this relationship on equal footing. I think if that can be done in a non-judgmental way, in a non-superior way, there's a mutual forgiveness there, because we're saying that that sexual sin is not greater than the sin that we both had before we came
or
in.
Any sin, hello.
Any sin,
any
fault.
But
any fault.
I can see that, Adam, for some people. It feels really different for me.
Okay.
I mean, you even said, you know, I know everything you did, and I'm just not sure that we need to share absolutely everything we did before we marry. I mean, I think there's something that there are basics that need to be shared, which are I was or wasn't sexual before I met you, because there's risks involved in that, right?
Yeah.
I do or don't have STDs. But some people actually get together and never talk about their sexual histories. And for some people, their psyches are really fragile, and to know everything that your partner did before you met them like almost becomes this screen in their head that they worry about comparison and all this other stuff. And I don't know. I mean, I feel a little differently than you do about this, I think.
Well, but I think okay, that's okay.
You're standing from a different place, so I can, you know, respect that.
I think the place that I'm standing from is more of one of where it is done in equal, where two people have the maturity not to compare, not to judge what happened before.
Yeah.
Because I think that there are elements to that when we're talking from a faith tradition where you're trying to make that switch from going to being single to being married, from going to have to not consider most other people but yourself into considering somebody else.
Sure.
There is an element of which that for some people, and maybe it's, I think you're right that it's not for all people, but for some people, holding that back, depending on what it was, that that guilt becomes internal and festers. And if it, if they are,
so if they feel like it's a secret,
if they feel like if this person knew this about me, they would reject me.
And
I think that's where that becomes starts to become something that needs to get out in the open.
Sure.
That if it is festering, if you're scared that if your partner knew this about you, that they wouldn't love you anymore.
And I think that there is a difference between secrets and privacy.
Okay.
You know, secrets and what is our own history. I mean, I think there's a difference there, and there's a continuum. But I hear you. If one person enters the marriage in faith and is purporting to, you know, I had experiences, but I don't want to tell you what. And, you know, later on, well, it was your cousin's mother's brother, you know, that probably needed to come out, you know. Certainly there are certain times that that would, that kind of revealing or confession and offering of forgiveness and acceptance might be another way that maybe I would put it.
Yeah, acceptance. That's, I think that's good. And I think where there is shame over those acts that occurred before marriage. And I think I'm a fan of Brené Brown's work on this. And one of the things that she talks about dealing with shame is that it is that you're able to talk about it with a trusted other and
to bring it to the light,
to yeah, absolutely.
It out so that isn't dark and festering, like you said.
Yeah. And so I think maybe that's the distinction that I'm making there is that if there's a shameful element to your sexual history for you, then that's what I think happens with a lot of faith traditions is that stuff we did before marriage, sexual acts before marriage become very shameful. And that creates a difficulty in the marriage relationship later on, because then I think sometimes it can get tied to all sexual acts then become shameful and we're not able to escape from the shame in the marital relationship.
And I think even the kids that I saw that had sex before marriage and they didn't think that they were, now somehow or another, some of them found the one direction of, okay, now there's not the titillation of the forbidden, but others of them had the attached shame of every time we do this, it reminds us of what we shouldn't have done, and that flattened their desire and their arousal.
Yeah.
So yeah, I understand that. That's good.
Yeah.
What else do you think that couples of faith could do who maybe particularly are making the marital adjustment?
Yeah, I think one of the things is that just as there are maybe cultural myths that a cultural at large have about sex, I wonder about faith myths that develop in the context of religion and faith experiences that particular faith may not hold to. I know I grew up in a Christian faith tradition as well, and that there were a lot of myths about sex that just permeated that culture that the more that I explored faith, I found that those were not true.
They weren't necessarily a true part of the faith,
yes.
But they were part of maybe the more religious myths that had developed around it.
Yeah, and so I think possibly exploring those. What are the things that our faith really believes about sex, and what are just myths that grew up as a result of
being
involved in the religion?
Could you give an example of one that you had heard?
I'll give one that's pretty common in our more conservative tradition, that sex is not for pleasure, and that sex is just for reproducing.
Right.
And so, and I think the more that I've explored that, I don't believe that that's really what the Bible teaches about sex.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you had parents who conveyed.
That's right.
Within your faith, the same faith as your parents, conveyed a pleasure model that they enjoyed each other sexually. But you're saying that, kind of around the edges of the teaching, there was something missing about sex being joyous and pleasurable and good in and of itself, that it was purposeful, maybe for procreation.
Or that you just, it's shameful to talk about.
Yeah.
That you don't talk about sex. And so I've seen couples that they don't talk about it with each other, right? Because they've never had an experience.
And that goes way beyond faith, right?
Yeah, that was sure. I mean, that's lots of people.
There are lots of people not talking about
it. There's lots of people, but I think within, faith traditions that you just don't even mention the way that you're abstinent, that you stay away from it, is you just don't have any conversation about it, is going to lead to promiscuity, which I think we've talked about before.
Yes. And I think there's one of the things that I saw was the kids who came into the sexual experience so naive. And I do counsel a lot of fundamentalist Christians and, as I said, culturally, people who have been abstinent. Is that the faith kids have an experience. They have a belief that I do not believe is driven by some sort of scriptural text, that if I obey all of these rules and I don't cross any lines, then I am promised an easy, fabulous sexual adjustment.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
You know, that sex is going to be glorious from the get-go, and they don't realize that they're beginners, that they're starters, that sex has a lot of working out, and there's a lot of education to it. And like you said, there's a need for communication, a need to develop an erotic language with each other. And those things they haven't had modeled, they haven't had talked about, they don't know. And what I've seen, which is really tragic, is these kids almost have a crisis of faith right after marriage, because they're like, this is it. This is the big deal. You know, this isn't fun. We barely know what we're doing. It's not really that hot. And I thought this was this glorious thing that I've been waiting for, and God has let me down. And you know, I mean, it takes a lot to kind of help them understand, oh, no, this is a process. And yeah,
you're
it's
learning.
True. For many people, sex in the beginning, yeah, it's kind of clumsy and it may not be that exciting and you don't know what you're doing. And, you know, there's a lot to be said. Mm-hmm. I would say if I could go back and help these couples, I would really offer them, there's got to be, you know, texts, books that are within your faith that you could reference before you marry, even if you're reading them separately. Or, I mean, there's got to be a way to get education about what this sexual experience is and what to expect. And definitely go see a gynecologist or a sex therapist about talking about some of the mechanics of it, how to make it better. I mean, one of the things that we do is in sex therapy is we talk to virgins about how to make it not so painful. You know, or not painful at all.
Yeah.
And it may mean not sex on the wedding night.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so many people, I think that's a cultural expectation as well as a faith-filled expectation to consummate the marriage on the wedding night. And many times they don't know what they're doing. She's not aroused. She's anxious. It hurts like crazy. He doesn't know how to stimulate her because he's so naive.
They're tired from the
wedding. They're exhausted. Yeah. You know, and it's like, and maybe, you know, no alcohol because of their faith. Yeah, so there's right. nothing that, you know, mitigates kind of anxiety. Yeah. Yeah. And so one, get some good education. Talk to your gynecologist. Talk to a trusted therapist. I had at one point a blog that was written on, it was called First Love, which was basically the steps of what you can do to take for a virgin to have a non-painful stuff. And I'm going to write that again. So I'll write that out again. But one, maybe don't have sex that first night. Really get to know each other's bodies, touch a lot, learn to become aroused.
Yeah, and for males in that, I think that's a good point of being going really slowly, really understanding, getting education about the female body, about how to be respectful of her and to do that in a way that is satisfying for both of you. Like, I think a lot of times males that are entering into that from a faith tradition are looking for that, are putting a lot of expectations on that first night, and that first night has to come soon. And we're getting married so that we can have sex, you know? And so we're getting into that quickly. And then that has to be, if that's not a fulfillment, then yeah, that's that crisis of faith. That's like, what are we doing? Why are we doing that? And so really understanding what you're saying there about that it will be painful the first time, or it can be, and so wanting to go slowly.
But you can imagine the virgin woman, too. Yeah. I mean, I hear it from women as well, this same crisis of faith. Like, they have this experience, it hurts them, they're not aroused, they don't have an orgasm, and then they're like, okay, well, that's I waited for this.
Yeah.
You know, this is not so great, and there isn't this buildup, and they don't know what they're doing. And first of all, to all of you out there, if you're stuck in this place, we want to encourage you that sex can be great and sex can grow and develop. And I would say one question I have from couples of mixed experience but same faith. So maybe one of them comes in with premarital experience and the other doesn't. And they're like, okay, you know, I had these experiences and I know sex can be hot and great and it's flat. With my partner because she doesn't know anything and she doesn't, or he doesn't know anything. Sometimes it's reversed, you know, and I have all these ideas that I want to try, but they're kind of nixed. That's one of the things I think of in terms of what I hear around the edges that, well, we don't do that because we're Christian. Mm. We don't do that because we're, you know, Christian or whatever, or, you know, that's outside of the faith. And it's like, it's not my understanding that the texts themselves actually have a lot of prohibition within marriage of what you should do in bed, right?
Is that? Yeah. Well, and I think that I was actually going to mention that. I think one of the things that you can do as well is to really go back to the scripture of your faith and really read it honestly. Mm-hmm. Read it honestly for what does it talk about sex and what are really, like you're saying, what does it say? And being honest about that and not listening to just what has been the faith expectation that that you've grown up with and begin to kind of integrate it that way. Because I think for the most part, people would find that there is a allowance for
a difference.
Yeah, I
will say I saw a young woman once who had never had an orgasm, had been having sex with her husband for 12 years, three times a week, no orgasm. And she was like, you know, I love him. It feels good. But I just, there's got to be more.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, honey, there's a little bit more. And masturbation was outside of their tradition. I mean, that was very forbidden. So, you know, an instruction for her to masturbate to orgasm, which is how 70% of all women learn to have an orgasm in childhood. But that was a taboo, so that could not be suggested. And again, as I've said, I don't cross those lines because I think there's plenty of ways to get around it. So they practiced some touching and stuff like that. But then on the way out about the third session, she stopped me in the hall and she said, but we wanted to ask you, what do you think about vibrators?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, we are good to go. You know, because vibrators were invented after her holy scriptures were written. And so they were completely not inside her tradition in any way.
Yeah.
There was no taboo against them. There was no anything. And so it was permissible.
Okay.
And so I suggested that. She had her first orgasm. She's like, you are so right. It feels so good. There's so much stress relief. I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, and so she was able to do that.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was a way.
And that was part of, like, learning, though. Like, and that is part of, like, what they had to do, really learn what worked for them.
Yeah.
And they did. They were able to do that within a context of faith that mattered to them.
Yeah. So any other ideas that you have about what these young people could do to get the help that they need to have the fulfillment that really they should have?
Yeah, I think that what we've mentioned, I think to kind of just summarize those is like really making sure you talk to people, knowing, I think, ultimately that faith and healthy, pleasurable sex can exist, that they can be integrated.
They can go together.
That they're not mutually
exclusive.
Thank God. Yeah, absolutely. Thank God is right. You know? And so that can happen, and that you may just have to explore that. You may have to be okay with taking steps to try to figure out whether it's talking with somebody at your church and congregation or talking with a therapist. Like, they can be integrated. And so exploring how that can happen for you.
That's great. You are listening to Foreplay Radio Sex Therapy with sex therapist Lori Watson and couples therapist Dr. Anna Matthews. Thanks so much for listening to our episode on spirituality and sex. Hey, help us stay on top here at Foreplay. We'd love it if you would subscribe and share it with your friends. And please take one sec and rate and review us. Thanks so much.